Come quick.
I'm coming. What in the world's all the excitement?
Look, Dad, the yard. Look.
Where did all those birds come from? Why, the yard's full of them.
Yeah, must be 1,000.
100, maybe. But I wonder what brought them here.
I know, Dad.
Oh?
Yeah, I've been feeding them every day. That's why they're here.
Well, son, I'm not so sure we want to start a bird farm around here. But I'm glad to see you being kind and considerate, even when it's a matter of feeding birds. And I'm sure it must please the Lord, too, Rob.
Oh, I hope so, Dad. But it's nothing, really. Lots of kids feed birds.
Well, that may be true, but just the same, I'm glad you're one who does. But you know, Rob, something's very interesting just occurred to me. What would you think if the birds started feeding you instead of you feeding them?
Boy, that'd sure be a switch. That couldn't happen in 1,000,000 years.
You're wrong, Rob. It did happen at least once, I know. And it wasn't 1,000,000 years ago either.
No kidding, Dad. You mean birds really fed somebody once?
Yes, they did. They actually kept that person alive, because if it hadn't been for them, he wouldn't have had anything to eat, and he'd certainly have starved. It's in the Bible, you know.
Really?
Yes. In the first book of Kings, chapter 17, I believe.
Tell me about it, will you, Dad?
Why not? Here. Let's close the door. And let's sit right over here by the window so we can watch those hungry little fellows out there while we talk. Now then, let's talk about Elijah and his bird, shall we?
He was a great prophet, wasn't he?
One of the greatest. Once he prophesied to the king of Israel. As certain as the Lord lives, O king, there will be neither dew nor rain in these years except by my word. Well, after Elijah had spoken to the king, then God spoke to Elijah and told him to go to the brook of Cherith and hide there. Now, I'm sure Elijah wondered what was to become of him when there wouldn't be any water in the land, and besides, what would he eat way out there by the brook where God was sending him? I don't know whether he spoke up and asked God about it, but I'm sure those questions were in his heart, and God knew they were there too. So God promised that he would take care of Elijah in a very strange way. Elijah knew he could drink the water of the brook as long as it lasted, but food, how would he get that? Now this is what God promised him. God said that he would have great black birds, ravens like crows, carry food to him. So Elijah obeyed the Lord. He went right to the brook Cherith, and sure enough, every morning, along about breakfast time, and every evening, along about supper time, Elijah heard, and presto, there was his breakfast, bread and meat, or there was his supper, just like that.
Boy, wouldn't that be great?
Morning and night, there came the ravens, and there came Elijah's food. Well, that's it, Rob. That's how God fed Elijah in a wonderful and miraculous way. Now I wonder, son, you know, I wonder if there isn't a lesson for us in all this.
Oh, I think of one right away, Dad.
Elijah obeyed. That's right, Rob. But wouldn't you have done the same?
Well,
no, not right away, at least. Well, now, just suppose God had told you to go and hide by a brook. What would you have said?
Now, don't tell me.
I know.
You do? How come?
Right. That's exactly what you'd have said.
But I didn't...
I know. But that's what you would have said, I'm sure. How come? How come? Boys and girls say it to their parents all the time, and the same boys and girls and their parents sometimes say it to God.
Would that be so wrong, Dad?
Well, you know, son, we're not to question God. We're to trust Him. We're to obey Him. He knows what's best for us, always. And And when he tells us to do something, we should do it immediately, even though what he asks us to do may seem impossible, like birds feeding a man. You know, Rob, the secret of peace and joy in our Christian walk is to live in perfect obedience to God at all times. We ought to say in our hearts what the people of Israel once said to Joshua long ago, "The Lord our God will we serve, and his voice will we obey."
Glad you can help with my project, Dad. Say, is it going to be neat?
Well, maybe we'll both learn something from it, Rob. Here, let's get busy on these tubifores first. How many do we need?
Six. 2 4-feet long and 4 6-feet long.
Now, well, I see you got your hair cut today, son.
Boy, I sure did.
You don't sound too happy about it.
I'm not.
How come?
Do you know what the barber did, Dad? He charged me $2 for that stupid haircut. Imagine it, $2.
Well, that's the going price, you know, Rob.
$2 just for a haircut? Boy, when I grow up, I'm never going to get my hair cut.
What's that?
I said when I grow up, I'm never going to get my hair cut.
I can't hear you, son.
I said when I grow up, I'm never going to get my hair cut.
How about a little break, Bob? I'd like to tell you about a haircut that really costs something.
More than $2?
Much more.
$3?
Well, you listen and judge for yourself. This is the story of a Bible man, Rob. A man who paid more for a haircut than any man in all history.
$100?
No, Rob, it didn't cost him in money. It cost him... Well, you'll know in a minute. You see, this man, his name was Samson. This man was a Nazarite, and because he was, he had made some very strict promises to God. He had promised, "I will not drink any strong drink. I will not touch a dead body. I will not cut my hair." As long as Samson kept these promises, God blessed him with enormous strength, made him so strong he could kill a lion with his bare hands, and so strong his enemies couldn't overcome him. Once they sent one of their ladies, a lady Samson loved, to find out the secret of his strength. She said to him, "Tell me, Samson, is there any way you can be tied so you can't get loose?"
"Just use 7 green wood fiber cords."
Now, of course, Delilah lost no time telling the Philistines, and they tied Samson with green wood fiber cords, but he snapped them as though they were string. And then Delilah scolded him for lying to her and kept begging him to tell her the truth. And finally, he got so tired of her nagging, he said, "Delilah, I'm a Nazarite. I promised God I would never cut my hair. If I break that promise, I'll be as weak as anybody." Now, of course, Delilah betrayed Samson to the Philistines again. While he was asleep, they came, cut off his hair, tied him with strong cords. And when Samson awoke, thinking himself as strong as ever, he tried to get free. But his strength was gone, and his cruel enemies took him, put out his eyes, and threw him in prison.
That story sure has a sad ending, Dad.
Oh, but it doesn't end there. It's true Samson paid a terrible price for yielding to temptation and disobeying God.
But in prison, he had time to think about his sin. He was sorry for it, asked God to forgive him. And once again, he promised God that he would let his hair grow and never cut it. After a while, his hair grew back again. And one day, the Philistines, their princes, and 3,000 men and women gathered on the prison house roof just to make fun of Samson. Looking down on him in the prison yard, they laughed and shouted all kinds of mean things at him. How pitiful Samson looked. Once so proud and strong, now weak, blind, helpless. But Samson knew that his strength had come from God before, and he prayed, "Oh, Lord God, do strengthen me only once, that I may get revenge on these Philistines for my eyes." Now, Samson was standing between the two main pillars that supported the roof where the Philistines were gathered. Suddenly, he grabbed those great pillars and began to pull with all his might. And he cried out, "Let me die with the Philistines." God heard Samson's prayer and gave back his old strength. And Samson pulled and pulled until the building began to rumble and groan. And then... well, that was it, Rob. Samson, with his great God-given strength, killed 3,000 of God's enemies.
Yeah, but he had to die with them, didn't he, Dad?
Yes, son, he did. See what I mean about that expensive haircut?
Dad, I didn't see you come home.
No, I guess you wouldn't. The way you've been working out there on that,
It's a clubhouse, Dad.
Sounds like a mighty ambitious project. Let me have a look at your blueprint.
Blueprint? What's that?
Your plans, Rob. Building plans.
Oh, I don't need any building plans, Dad. I just figure it out as I go along.
Well, I guess that's one way to do it, but I hardly think it's the best way.
How come?
Well, simply because it takes planning to build a house. Lots of planning.
How come?
Hold it a minute, Rob. Rob, you look like you need a break. What do you say we take a little time out and sit down here for a little chat?
Okay, Dad. I'm kind of tired, all right.
Well, now, Rob, let's just think things through a little, shall we? Putting up a building, even a small one, isn't the easiest thing to do. Without planning, this clubhouse of yours is almost certain to turn into some monstrosity. Even the most experienced contractors wouldn't think of building a house without a set of plans. Why, even God himself never built anything without plans. Remember Noah's Ark? God planned every tiny detail of it before he asked Noah to build it. And he told Noah all the plans ahead of time. And then there was the tabernacle. God gave Moses complete instructions on how to build it. And when Solomon built his great, beautiful temple for the Lord, he had specific instructions on how it was to be built, the length and width of it, the materials to be used, where everything was to be placed. So you see, Rob, even God wouldn't build anything without plans. And do you know something else, son?
What?
God has a set of building plans for your life and mine. And we ought to learn what those plans are and how we can fit into them. Yeah, but I'm so young, Dad. You want your life to count for the Lord, don't you? Yes, I really do. Well, then, the one way you can make sure it does is to find out what God's plan is for you, and then make certain everything you do helps to make that plan come true. Will he really show me what he wants me to do, Dad? If you're sincere in wanting to know. Will he show me soon? Well, I can't answer that, son. All I know is that he'll reveal his will to you when he's ready for you to know what it is. Yeah, and what do I do until then? Well, first of all, you ought to make a real commitment of your life to him. Commitment? Yes. Yes, tell him, if you really mean it, that you know your life belongs to him. Then pray, ask him to show you his will for you. Anything else, Dad? Yes, Rob. Read the Bible every day. Do your best in your studies. Be faithful in attending church. Take your responsibilities in Sunday school and young people seriously. Tell others about Jesus Christ. Try to please him in everything you do. And he'll show me his will for me at just the right time, son. Why don't we pray about it right now, Rob? Okay, Dad. You pray first, and tell the Lord what's on your heart. Dear Lord, I'd like to be just what you want me to be, and I'd like to know what your plan is for me. Please show me, dear Lord, so I can be preparing for it now and so... It's prayer time at the Baker's with Dad and Mother Baker and their son Rob gathered round the supper table. Dad Baker is just picking up the family Bible and turning to the second book of Kings. But before beginning to read, he turns to his young son and says, "Well, Rob, did you have enough to eat?"
"Sure did, Dad. Oh, those hot dogs were great, Mom."
"I'm glad you enjoyed them."
"Enjoyed them? Did you see how many he ate?"
"Only four, Dad. Jimmy Thomas always has five, and Frank Wilson eats at least six if his mom will let him."
"Well, I think what we need around here, and what the Thomases and Wilsons need, too,
is yard-long hot dogs, huh, Dad?"
"Yes. Either that or some good old miracle food."
"Miracle food? What's that?"
"Well, we've read about it in the Bible, son."
"I know. Manna. That's what you mean, isn't it, Dad?"
"Yes, that was certainly miracle food.
I remember some other miracle food in the New Testament.
The boy's lunch. 2 loaves and 5 fishes.
5 loaves and 2 fishes. Jesus multiplied them until they fed thousands of people."
"Yeah, and there was more left over than there was to start with."
"Right. The supply was inexhaustible until the need was met. Well, you know, our Bible reading tonight is about another inexhaustible supply of food, right here in 2 Kings, chapter 17. You remember the story I told you about the birds that fed the prophet Elijah?"
"Boy, that was neat. Is there another story like that?"
"Yes. It's about the same man, and it's all about how God fed him in a miraculous way again. In fact, it was just after Elijah had been fed by the ravens. God told him to leave the brook when it had dried up and go to Zarephath. There he would meet a widow who would supply him with food. The widow was gathering sticks when Elijah found her, and he said, 'Lady, would you please give me a drink? Bring me a little bread, too.
I have nothing left except a handful of flour in a jar. and a little oil in a jug, and I was just gathering a few sticks to prepare it for me and my son to eat, and then we must die.
Have no fear. Just go and do what you plan to do. But make my loaf first and bring it to me, and then make one for you and your son. You don't have to worry. God told me that your jar of flour will never be empty, and your jug will always have oil in it until God provides rain for the land. So the widow obeyed Elijah, and you know, it was just as Elijah said. The jar of flour and the jug of oil never went empty until it rained again, and they didn't need miracle food any longer.
Oh, that's a neat story, Dad.
A very wonderful story, yes.
Boy, wouldn't I like to have miracle food like that around here. I'd never stop eating.
Well, it's almost that way now. Oh, Mom, I'm not so bad. Jimmy Thomas eats more than I do every day.
But hold on a minute, Rob. We do have miracle food around here.
No kidding.
That's right. An inexhaustible supply.
Well, how come I've never seen it?
You see it every day.
Well, how come I've never eaten any of it?
You have.
No, honest, I haven't, Dad. I don't even know where it is.
Here it is. Right here. Right here. My hand.
The Bible.
Right. It's food, Rob. Spiritual food, you know. Jeremiah tells us that. Thy words were found, and I did eat them. Yes, God's word is food for our souls. It's a miracle food, Rob. Because just like the widow's jar of flour and jug of oil, it'll never get empty. The supply is always there for us, whenever we want it.
Well, I hope there'll never be a time when any of us feels we've had enough of it.
Yes, Mom, I hope our appetite for God's word will never be fully satisfied. I pray that we'll hunger and thirst for it as long as we live.
Here's a note from the milkman, Jim. Milk's gone up again. Another whole cent a quart.
Hey, Mom, that's the second time this year. Butter's higher than it's ever been, too. And speaking of butter, pass it, will you please, Rob?
Here you are, Dad. Talk about the high cost of living. Have you ever seen anything like it? I don't remember when food ever cost more.
I do.
Really?
Well, it was a long, long time ago, in Old Testament days.
Why, I had no idea that food could ever cost as much way back then.
Well, now, it didn't, not really, except once.
Come on, Dad, tell us. Yes, Jim, you've got me guessing, too.
Well, I'm thinking of how much one particular young man paid for his food.
Who, Dad? Who?
Don't you remember?
I think I do, Jim. Right near the beginning of the Old Testament.
Yes, back in Genesis, the 25th chapter. That young man's name was, let's just see if you can guess, okay?
Okay, Dad, I'm ready.
Well, there were two boys in the family I'm thinking about, and even though they were twins, they were so different, you'd hardly know they were brothers. One lived in tents, and the other
was a hunter.
Right, son. But I hardly think he had that kind of hunting equipment.
Well, anyway, his name was Esau, and his brother's name was Jacob.
Right again. But it's Esau I'm thinking of mainly.
He's the one who paid so much for his food.
How much, Dad?
That's a little hard to say. You see, he didn't pay for it in dollars and cents. Well, here, let's review the story, shall we?
Okay, Dad.
Mother?
Oh, sure, Jim. We have a few minutes before Rob has to start off for school.
All right, let's see how well I remember it. Jacob and Esau were not only brothers, they were twins. Jacob lived in tents, and Esau, as you've already said, was a hunter. Now, one day, Esau came in from the field so hungry he could hardly walk. You know how hungry you sometimes get. You just can't wait to get to that bread and jam after school. Well, I imagine that's the way Esau felt when he came in from the field that day. And the first thing he saw was some delicious pottage Jacob had made.
Pottage? What's that?
Pottage? Oh, it's a kind of red stew, Rob. Well, anyway, that made Esau hungrier than ever.
Oh, I remember now, Dad. I remember the whole story.
Okay, then suppose we act it out, shall we?
You mean like you'll be Esau and I'll be Jacob? Okay, Dad, that sounds like fun.
All right, Rob. I'm Esau now, and I've just come in from the fields. Jacob, I'm starved. Give me something to eat, will you? Some of that great-looking pottage, maybe, huh?
All right, Esau, I'll give you some, but it'll cost you.
Okay, okay, how much do you want?
Your birthright?
You're crazy.
That's my price.
You mean it?
Sure I mean it. Do you want it or don't you?
Well, better make up your mind. But, Jacob, that's all I have.
That's my price.
You surely drive a hard bargain, pal. Well, I guess it really doesn't matter. I'm so hungry, if I don't eat, I'll die anyway. And my birthright won't do me any good, and then, okay, I'll do it.
Promise?
Promise.
Say, you two, you ought to go on the stage.
That good, huh?
Well, almost. Now, Mr. Barrymore, can we have the rest of the story?
Okay, we'll continue. I guess we all see the point of the story, don't we? Esau cared so little about his birthright that he sold it for a meal. Some bread and stew.
Oh, I know the story, Dad. But what's a birthright?
Ever hear of a will, son?
Sure, I know what a will is. It's when a person leaves what he owns to someone else, his wife or his children.
That's right, Rob. Well, in the days of Jacob and Esau, the oldest son always got the biggest share of his father's property and possessions. They were his just by right of birth, just because he was born before the other children in the family.
I see that now, Dad. Just think how much Esau gave away.
See what I mean about the high cost of food?
Sure do, Dad. That must have been one of the most expensive meals anyone ever had.
I expect it was, Rob. It was a bad bargain on Esau's part, wasn't it?
Sure was. Boy, I hope I'll never be that foolish.
I hope you'll never want anything so badly that you won't stop to consider the price you may have to pay for it.
I guess you're not talking about food, are you?
No. And I'm not referring to money when I talk about price. I'm talking about things like a good name, a good reputation, your Christian testimony. These things are priceless. They can't be bought with money, but they can be lost through just one foolish decision or one thoughtless act.
Yeah, I think I understand, Dad.
Yes, you see, son, the thing you want may look awfully attractive, and you may feel you just can't live without it, like Esau and the food he wanted so badly. But, Rob, I hope you'll always take time to consider the cost of getting what you want, and I hope you'll always pray about it.
Yeah, I hope I will too, Dad.
It would make Satan happy if he could get you and other boys like you to spoil your reputation and your Christian testimony just by offering you something so attractive that you'd do anything to get it.
Well, son, that clock's moving around pretty fast there.
Goodness, it is. Hurry now, both of you.
Okay, Mom.
And thanks, Dad. I'm going to remember Esau and that expensive meal for a long, long time.
Stay out. Don't you ever come back in my yard again, you mean kid, you. Oh, that Billy Wilson. Boy, does he bug me.
Just a minute, son. What's all the shouting about?
Oh, it's that new guy next door. He's just messing up everything around here.
Like what?
Well, he's always begging to use my bike, and he wants to follow us kids wherever we go, and he's trying to get to be pals with Johnny Thomas, and, well, I just don't like him. If I never see him again, it'll be too soon.
Where are you going, son?
To get my Bible.
Oh?
Yeah, I got to work on my memory verse for tomorrow.
Here, let's use the family Bible. It's right here. Come on, maybe I can be of help.
I don't need any help.
I think maybe you do, son. Let's work on it together.
Okay.
What's the verse?
It's in Luke. Luke 10:27.
Oh, yes, here it is. Well, this is interesting.
What, Dad?
Have you read the verse?
Not yet.
Well, then, let me read it now. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy strength and with all thy mind. Know the rest of it, Rob?
Sure. And thy neighbor as thyself.
Thy who?
Neighbor.
Well, here in my Bible it says thou shalt love thy neighbor, even the mean little kids in the block.
You're kidding, Dad. It doesn't really say that, does it?
Not in so many words. It doesn't call our neighbors by name, but it does say neighbor. And since Billy Wilson lives next door, I figured it might possibly include him.
Well, I guess the Lord doesn't want us to hate anybody, does he? But, Dad, why should I love anybody I hardly even know?
Well, now, is that the way Jesus said it? Thou shalt love thy neighbor just like yourself, but only if you know him well. Do you remember the story of the Good Samaritan?
Sure, Dad, I like that story.
Do you know where it's found, Rob?
In the Bible.
Yes, of course. But strangely enough, son, it's found right in the very chapter we're looking at. Jesus is talking to a lawyer here, you know, and the lawyer asks him a question. Remember what it was?
No. Oh, yes, I do. He said, "Who is my neighbor?"
And what did Jesus say?
I don't know.
Well, he answered the lawyer's question with the story of the Good Samaritan. Can you tell it to me, the story, I mean?
Sure, Dad, it's one of my favorite Bible stories.
Okay, son, tell it to me.
Well, see, there was this here man. He was traveling from
Jerusalem down to Jericho.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's where it was. And these here thieves come up to him and robbed him and beat him and left him there almost dead. And then there was this here priest who came along and just looked at him and walked by on the other side of the street. And somebody else.
A Levite.
Uh-huh. A Levite passed by on the other side of the street, too. Boy, they sure weren't very nice, were they, Dad?
No, not very.
Then there was this here real good man, the Samaritan, who found him and took care of him and treated his wounds and brought him to this here hotel and left him there and told the keeper to take good care of him and he'd pay for it all when he came back.
You remember the story well, Rob. Now look down here at verse 36. The Lord asks a question. Read it, Rob.
Okay. Which now of these three thinkest thou was neighbor unto him that fell among thieves?
What's the answer, Rob?
Everybody knows that. I'll bet even that mean little Wilson kid knows. Oops, I guess I shouldn't be talking that way about him, should I?
Well, let's get back to the memory verse, shall we? Read it again, Rob, and then let's see how well you can memorize it.
Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and with all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself.
Do you hear that?
How could I help but hear it? What is it, a monster from Mars?
Oh, Dad, you know what it is.
Poor dog.
Why, of course. It's the biggest dog I've ever seen.
Sounds like a Great Dane or St. Bernard.
It's a St. Bernard. Belongs to the new neighbors.
The Wilsons?
Uh-huh.
I wonder if they realize what a remarkable breed of dog they have.
What's so special about St. Bernards, Dad? Except that they're so big.
Well, over in Switzerland, for example, they've become very famous.
How come?
Because of their rescue work in the mountains. You know, in that country, the mountains are very high, and the snow on them is always very deep. Before tunnels were dug through those mountains, travelers had to climb over them, which, of course, was very dangerous. The places where the travelers crossed were called passes. One was called Simplon, and the other St. Gothard, and another one St. Bernard.
Oh, like the dogs, huh, Dad?
Right. But let me tell you more, Rob. At the top of each mountain pass, there used to be a place kept by monks to provide food and shelter for people who had to cross those high mountains in the winter. Many of those travelers would become exhausted as they climbed and would be caught in heavy snowstorms, lose their way, freeze to death, unless they were rescued by one of those big, faithful St. Bernards.
What could dogs do to save them?
Well, you see, the monks would put food and wine in containers that they tied around the dogs' necks, and then they'd send the dogs out to search for lost travelers. All through the mountains you could hear these great dogs barking and making a big commotion so travelers in trouble might hear them and call for help. And when a tired traveler called, then the dogs would go to him with a food and drink. And sometimes this was all that was needed to strengthen the traveler enough so he could follow the rescue dogs to safety.
Did they save very many?
Well, I read of one, St. Bernard, Old Dependable, they called him, who rescued 68.
Wow!
Yes, but there's a sad story connected to that particular dog, Rob. Once he went out for lost travelers, barking and searching, and suddenly he stumbled on a traveler who was unconscious and covered with snow. Old Dependable knew just what to do. He quickly scraped the snow off the man and began to lick his face and hands, but he couldn't revive him. Finally, he stretched himself across the man's body so that the warmth from his own body might bring the man back to life, and it did. But do you know what happened? When the man revived and found that big old dog lying on him, he thought it was a wolf that was trying to kill him. So he took out a dagger and plunged it into the faithful dog that had come to save him. The poor dog struggled to his feet and started for home, bleeding terribly with every step.
Did he make it, Dad? Did he?
He made it home, Rob. But he was so weak from loss of blood, he died shortly afterwards. And do you know what those monks did just because they loved him so much? They took Old Dependable skin, stuffed it, and put it on display.
Boy, that sure is a sad story. I feel sorry for that poor dog.
I do too, son. But you know, That story reminds me of what we read in the Bible about the Lord Jesus Christ. He came all the way from heaven into this world to seek and to save those who were lost. And what happened? The wicked people he came to save turned on him and nailed him to a cross. Yeah, I know. Now Jesus is still seeking the lost, wanting to save us from sin and eternal death, and to save our souls for all eternity. If we reject him, if we turn him away, the Bible says we crucify him all over again. Well, I sure wouldn't want to do that. I'm so glad you didn't, Rob. And I'm glad I didn't, too. I'm thankful that Jesus was willing to go up and down through the mountains of sin, searching for the lost, just like old Dependable did over there in Switzerland. And I'm glad the Lord found us and rescued us, aren't you? Yeah, I sure am. And you know what, Dad? We should be like old Dependable too, shouldn't we? Always going out to look for lost travelers in the mountains of sin. Yes, son. Yes, we should be going out to tell them that Jesus saves and helping to lead them to safety in God's heavenly home. Thanks, Dad. I'll sure never forget old Dependable. Will you?
God's people, the children of Israel, were very unhappy, for the army of Midian had destroyed nearly all of their crops and cattle. That's why Gideon was harvesting some grain in a secret place to hide it from the Midianites. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared to him.
The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor.
Oh, my Lord, if you are with us, why has all this trouble come to us? Where are all the miracles of which our fathers told us?
Go now in my strength, and you will conquer all the Midianites. I will be with you.
Then show me a sign, so I can be sure.
The angel told Gideon to prepare some meat, some bread, and a pot of soup, and place them on a rock. The angel reached out his staff and touched them, and instantly fire came out of the rock and burned up the food. And the angel departed.
Blessed be God, for I have seen his angel face to face.
And Gideon blew on his trumpet and called all the men of his country to prepare for battle. Again he prayed to God.
O God, if you will save Israel by my hand, let me see another sign. I will put some wool out on the ground, and in the morning, if the wool is wet with dew, but the ground around it is dry, then I will know that you will help me, as you promised.
And that is exactly what happened. The wool was so wet that he wrung a whole bowlful of water out of it. But he prayed once more.
Lord, do not be angry with me, but please prove to me once more that you are with us.
Again he put out a piece of wool, and when he picked it up in the morning, the wool was dry, and all the earth around was wet with dew.
Surely the Lord is with us.
Gideon, you have too many soldiers. Perhaps they will think they have conquered Midian in their own strength. Do as I instruct you.
The Midianites have a great and terrible army. Many of us may be killed. If any of you soldiers are afraid, you may go home now.
And 22,000 of them were afraid and left the camp. Only 10,000 stayed.
Come, let us all go down to the brook for a final drink of water.
I'm thirsty.
The Lord has instructed me, all of you men who stoop down on your knees to drink must go back too. You who lap the water with your hand to your mouth may stay.
And of the 10,000 soldiers, only 300 remained. That night, Gideon quietly crept down to the enemy's camp and listened to what they were saying in the tents.
Quietly, quietly, make a single sound. Quietly, quietly, creeping on the ground.
You know, last night I had a strange dream. I dreamed that a small loaf of bread rolled into our tent and killed everyone inside and overturned the tent.
I know what that means. It means that Gideon will come into our camp and capture us.
I hope that's not what will happen.
Surely the Lord is with us.
Silently, silently, back to his camp again. Silently, silently.
Listen, men, watch me and do as I do. First, we will surround the enemy camp. And then, every man take a trumpet in his right hand and a pitcher with a lamp inside in his left. Then, when I give the signal, blow the trumpet and break the pitcher and shout, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon." Remember now, make as much noise as you can.
The army of Midian was so frightened that they cried out and ran in terror. Some even killed each other in the confusion. And that day, Gideon's tiny army, with the help of God, won a mighty victory.
Gideon, Gideon, Gideon was a captain bold. Gideon, Gideon, in the army of the Lord. Midian, Midian, Midian was his enemy.
Joseph, my son, you have been a fine boy and have brought great joy to me in my old age. Take this coat of many colors, and when you wear it, remember that I love you very much.
Thank you, Father. I will never forget your kindness to me. Father, last night I had a strange dream. I dreamed that the sun and moon and 11 stars all bowed down and worshipped me.
Is that so?
And another time, I dreamed that my brothers and I were out working in the field, and all of a sudden my sheaf stood up straight, and all the other sheaves stood around and worshipped my sheaf. When I told my brothers about the dream, they mocked me and said hateful things.
Dreams are sometimes difficult to understand, Joseph. I'm sure your brothers didn't mean the things they said. They're out in the field now, feeding the flocks. Why don't you go find them and bring me word of how they are getting along?
And all of his brothers were jealous of him.
Yes, all of his brothers were jealous of him, for Jacob had given them love.
For Jacob had given them
love. Here comes that dreamer brother of ours, wearing the beautiful coat that Father gave him.
We ought to kill him. Then see what would become of his dreams.
We could slay him and cast his body into a pit. Then we'll tell Father that a wild animal has eaten him. Quiet, here he comes now.
Hello, brothers. Father sent me to find out where you were feeding the flock and to bring word
Get
to...
Get the dreamer! What? Bind him up!
What are you doing? I didn't...
We are going to kill you. Rid ourselves of your boastful dreams. Then we'll see who becomes Father's favorite.
Wait a minute. Let's not kill him. After all, he is our brother. We could just tie him and leave him in a pit somewhere.
I have a better idea, Reuben. Let's make some profit off him. We can sell him to some merchantman and be rid of him without killing him, and make some money besides.
And so the jealous brothers sold Joseph to some merchants that passed by for 20 pieces of silver. And Joseph was brought to Egypt. The brothers took the coat of many colors and dipped it in goat's blood and returned to their father Jacob.
Oh, Father, look what we found. It looks like Joseph's coat, but we are not sure.
It is. It is. It is my son's coat. An evil beast must have eaten him. Joseph must be dead. Oh, my son, my son.
Joseph is dead. Joseph is dead. A terrible animal has come and killed.
But Joseph was not dead. Instead, he was sold into the house of Potiphar, a rich Egyptian who was captain of the king's guard. And the Lord was with Joseph, and his new master was very pleased. But Potiphar's wife was an evil woman, and she told lies about Joseph and had him thrown into prison.
Oh, that's awful!
Then one day, the king had two dreams. And he called all the wise men and magicians together to explain the dream.
Wise men, magicians, I have had two dreams and I want you to tell me what they mean. In the first dream, there were seven fat and healthy cows feeding in the meadow. Then seven sickly cows came along and ate the fat cows. But still, the skinny cows did not get fat. In the next dream, there were seven good ears of corn, and seven poor ears of corn came along and ate them. Now tell me, what does this mean?
Oh, King, live forever. This is a very strange thing. I cannot understand it at all.
I cannot either. These are certainly very unusual dreams.
So hard to understand.
Then one of the king's servants remembered that Joseph, who was still in prison, could explain dreams. So Joseph was brought before the king and told of the dreams.
I cannot tell you the meaning of it myself, but God will help me. The dreams mean that there will be 7 years of great plenty in this land, and then will come 7 years of famine when there will be no rain, and all the food will be burned up. It would be a good idea to save some of the food from the good years so that the people can eat it when the bad years come.
You have given me a good explanation of the dreams. I will make you ruler of all Egypt under me. You will gather up much food in the good years so that all the people may eat it during the bad years. And I will give you jewels and beautiful clothes, and you shall be over all the land.
magicians couldn't, but Joseph did it.
And so it was, there were 7 years with plenty to eat, and then came the famine. There was no food in all the lands around, except for the food that Joseph had stored up in Egypt. Up in Canaan, Joseph's father and his family were hungry too. Jacob sent 10 of his sons to Egypt to buy food, and when they came to Joseph, they didn't recognize him, but he knew his brothers.
Where do you men come from?
O great ruler, we are come from the land of Canaan to buy food.
I don't believe you. You are spies come to see how bad the famine is.
No, great ruler. We have come to buy food. We are all the sons of one man. We are honest men, not spies.
It is not true.
We are all 10 brothers. And we have also one more brother who is at home with our father. And one brother who is no more.
You must prove this to me. I will keep one of you here in my prison while the rest of you take food back to your land. But you must then bring the youngest brother back to me, that I may prove that what you say is true.
And so Simeon was kept in Egypt while the other brothers returned home with sacks of corn. On the way back, they opened a sack of corn to feed the animals. And what do you suppose they found?
What?
Right in the top of the sack was all of the money they had paid Joseph for the food.
Really?
When they saw this, they were afraid, and they hurried home and told Jacob everything that had happened.
You sons have brought me much sorrow. First Joseph died, then Simeon is prisoned in Egypt, and now you want to take my youngest son Benjamin back there.
But, Father, we must have more food. I will see to it that no harm comes to Benjamin.
What happened then?
The brothers took Benjamin and returned to the land of Egypt. When Joseph saw his youngest brother, he wept for joy. But they still didn't recognize him.
We've come to the land of Egypt to buy of your corn and grain. We brought our young brother, we did as you said. Now we must go home again. Now we must go home again.
Stop, thief! Stop! You've stolen from my master's house.
No, we haven't. We just purchased some food in Egypt.
Open your sacks and let me see what's inside. See? Here is the golden cup from my master's table. You've stolen it. Now you must come back with me.
But...
Come on!
The brothers were taken back to Joseph's house.
What kind of men are you anyway? I did good to you and now you have done this evil to me. Benjamin, the cup was found in your sack. Now you must be my servant.
Oh, ruler, have mercy on us. Benjamin is the youngest child, and our father dearly loves him. If he does not return, our father will surely die. Oh, let me stay in his place. Please have mercy on us.
Do you know who I am? Come nearer. I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt.
Joseph? You are Joseph?
Don't be angry with yourselves for what you did. God wanted it that way, so that I could preserve your lives. It was not really you who sold me into Egypt, but God wanted me to save the lives of many people. He made me what I am today. Go now and bring our father back and tell him of all the wonderful things that God has done.
So Jacob took all his family and his possessions and went to Egypt. And Joseph gave them all food and clothing and cared for them from that day on.
God really made everything turn out right, didn't he?
That's right. All things work together for good to them that love God.
All things work together for good to them
Ago in the city of Babylon, there lived a king whose name was Nebuchadnezzar.
I can say it. Nebuchadnezzar.
It is a difficult name, isn't it? Nebuchadnezzar. One day, King Nebuchadnezzar decided to put up a golden idol, and he commanded that all the people should worship it.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. Whenever you hear the sound of the trumpets and other instruments, everyone must fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. Anyone who does not obey shall be cast into the fiery furnace that very hour. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye.
Rum ta ta pa pum pum.
Rum ta ta pa pum pum. When you hear the sound of the trumpets, you must bow down.
Now also living in the city of Babylon were three Hebrew men named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Abednego, that's a funny name.
Oh, but these three young men loved God and wanted to please him in everything they did. They remembered what God had said.
Thou shalt have no other gods before me.
Meshach, Abednego, have you heard what the king has commanded? He has ordered that every day when the trumpets sound, everyone must fall down and worship the golden idol.
But he can't do that. We must worship no one but God.
If we don't, they'll throw us into the fiery furnace.
Don't be afraid, Shadrach. God will protect us. We'll tell the king that we won't worship his golden image.
When King Nebuchadnezzar heard that the Hebrews had refused to bow down, he was very angry.
So they have disobeyed me. Heat the furnace 7 times hotter than ever before. Have the most mighty men in my army tie up those 3 Hebrews and throw them into the fiery furnace. We will make an example of the 3 Hebrews.
My rebellious Hebrews. Just look at those flames.
Is your God worth that?
Soldiers, take them. Throw them into the fire.
But our king, if we go too near, we will perish with the Hebrews.
I said, throw them in.
My eyes. Did we not cast 3 men tied up into the furnace? Look now. There are 4 men loose and walking around in the fire. and they are not hurt at all. The fourth man looks like the Son of God.
And do you know, when they came out, not a hair was singed, and their clothes were not burned. They didn't even have the smell of fire on them.
That's wonderful.
It certainly is. So I hope that every boy and girl will remember this. If someone tries to make you do something wrong, don't you do it. God will take care of you, too.
A time to work and a time to play.
A time to sing and a time to pray.
But Samson learned in a difficult way that the Lord he must obey. The Lord said, Samson, don't cut your hair, for might and strength are hidden there.
But he told all to a lady fair,
and he found it was a snare.
And he found it was a snare.
The cruel Philistines had captured God's people and ruled over them for 40 years. During this time, there was a man named Manoah, whose wife had no children. One day an angel appeared to them and said,
I know you have never had any children, but soon you will have a son. Beware not to drink any strong drink, and whatever you do, do not let anyone cut the child's hair from the day of his birth on.
Manoah and his wife offered a sacrifice to the Lord, and the angel burned it, and then disappeared into the fire.
Surely we will die, for we have seen God.
I don't think so, because he said that I would have a son, and I believe it will come true.
And so the child was born, and she named him Samson. And as he grew, his mother never let anyone cut his hair. And he became very strong, for the Lord was with him.
Samson, 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 the strongest man alive.
What did he do with his mighty strength?
There was a young lion in the land, and he killed that lion with his bare hand.
Really? What else did he do?
He caught by the tail 300 fox, and he turned them on the enemy to burn their crops.
What a man!
He went to the camp of the Philistine, and he killed 1,000 at a single time. Samson!
Samson's great strength was known all over the land, and the Philistines hated him because they couldn't win against him in battle. The enemy sent a beautiful woman named Delilah to learn the secret of his mighty muscles.
Samson, you must be tired after doing battle all day. Come, put your head on my lap and rest a while.
Oh, yes. Now I'm more comfortable.
Samson, tell me your little secret. What makes you so strong?
Well, you know, if they tied me with 7 green branches that were never dried, then I'd be as weak as any other man.
As soon as Samson fell asleep, Delilah tied him with 7 green branches. Then she shouted,
Samson! Samson! The Philistines are coming!
Huh? What? Where?
Got so!
Oh, Samson, you were teasing me. The 7 branches didn't have anything to do with your strength. What is it really?
Well, I'll tell you, if they tied me up with new ropes that had never been used before, my strength would all be gone.
Again, Samson fell asleep, and Delilah tied him with new ropes.
Samson! The enemy is coming again.
Got you this time, Samson!
Samson, you lied to me. The ropes have no effect on your strength either.
Really? If you take my long hair and weave it into a web, I will be helpless.
Again he slept, and Delilah wove his hair into a web. And when more soldiers came, he conquered them, too.
How can you say you love me, Samson, when you've mocked me 3 times? Please tell me.
I'm sorry to have kept it secret from you. You see, ever since I was a baby, my hair has never been cut. If it were cut off, then I would certainly be as weak as the others.
This time, when Samson slept, Delilah had his hair cut off. This broke the command God had given to him.
Samson! Samson! Here come the Philistines!
What? Where? What has happened? My strength is gone. My hair is cut off. We've got him. Well done, Delilah. Let's cut out his eyes and throw him in prison.
And so Samson was blinded and put into prison. But as the months passed, Samson's hair began to grow back. One day he was brought before a great crowd of the Philistines who were having a holiday. They wanted to mock him.
Guard, put my hands on the pillars of this building so I may rest a minute.
And as he stretched his arms between the pillars, he summoned all his strength and pushed the pillars so the whole building fell down. And that day, Samson and thousands of the Philistines were buried in the wreckage of that huge building. Samson slew more of God's enemies in his death than he did in his whole life.
There's a time to laugh and a time to cry. A time to live and a time to
Samuel brought to her heart great joy.
She gave
child is a gift of God, as every mother knows. And none knew better than Hannah did, the Bible tells us so.
In the little village of Ramah, many years ago, there lived a man named Elkanah. Do you know what his wife's name was?
What was it?
It was Hannah.
Oh.
Hannah and Elkanah loved each other very much, and they loved God, too. Every year they made a trip to the temple in a distant city to worship God and to pray.
Oh, God, you've been so kind to me in many ways. You've given me good health and a fine husband. But, Lord, you've not blessed me with any children. Gracious God, if you will only give to me a son, I will give him back to you, that he may serve you all the days of his life.
Eli the priest was sitting near a pillar of the temple, and he saw Hannah's lips moving, but couldn't hear her voice. He thought she was drunk.
Uh-oh, he was making a mistake.
Shame on you, woman, for being drunk. You should stop drinking and serve the Lord.
Oh, sir, I have not had either wine or strong drink. I am a sad woman, for the Lord has given me no children. I have been praying that God would bless me with a baby boy.
I'm sorry I judged too quickly. Go in peace, then, and may the Lord of Israel give you the desire of your heart.
As Hannah went back to her home, she knew that all.
When Samuel was old enough to leave his mother, she prepared some gifts and brought them with the young child to Eli at the temple.
Sir, do you remember several years ago that a woman was here praying for a son?
Yes, I think I remember.
I was that woman. And here is my son, Samuel, whom God sent in answer to my prayers.
Hello there, Samuel.
Good morning, sir. I promised God that if he would give me a baby boy, I would give him back in thankfulness. So now I want to leave Samuel here in the temple with you to help in serving the Lord. Samuel, my dear son, you'll be very happy here in God's house. I'll return to visit you as often as I can, and I'll bring you new clothes and other gifts when I come. God bless you. And use you, my son. Goodbye.
God bless you too, Hannah.
And so Hannah returned to her home in Ramah, and young Samuel stayed on serving the Lord with Eli at the temple. As he grew more and more, everyone loved him, and God was pleased. One night, as Samuel was lying in bed, he heard a voice say,
Samuel.
Samuel.
What was that? Yes, Eli. What do you want?
I didn't call you, Samuel. Go back to bed. Samuel.
Oh, I'm sure I heard him call this time. What is it, Eli?
Go to bed and get some sleep, Samuel. You must be hearing things. S-
Samuel.
Samuel! Oh! Eli, I'm sure I heard you calling.
No, my boy, I didn't call. But I believe God did. Go back to your bed, and if you hear that call again, say, "Speak, Lord, for your servant hears you."
Samuel! Samuel!
Samuel! Speak, Lord, for your servant hears you.
Samuel, I will do something in this land which will make everyone's ears tingle. I will punish Eli because he has allowed his sons to do evil things. He did not even try to stop them.
When morning came, Samuel went about his work and was afraid to tell Eli what God had said.
Samuel, come here. Tell me, what did the Lord say to you last night?
Oh, Eli, I'm afraid to tell you.
You'd better tell me, or God will punish you.
And so Samuel did tell Eli the priest what God had said in the night.
God has spoken. Let him do what is best.
And Samuel continued to grow, and everyone in the land heard about him. They all knew that someday Samuel would surely become a great prophet.
And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.